This is the Rising Tide Startups Podcast, where we chat with startup founders from all over the globe to help you escape the cubicle and begin your own startup journey. Make sure you take notes. Every episode of Rising Tide Startups is sponsored by Podbrand Media. Let Podbrand create and host your company-branded podcast. Learn more at podbrandmedia.com. This is another episode of Rising Tide Startups. My name is Kevin Pruitt. I am honored to host this podcast, and I have a very, very good friend on today, Steve Collins. Steve, thanks for joining us on Rising Tide.
My pleasure, Kevin. It's good to be here.
So I think maybe I've known you longer than any guest I've ever interviewed on Rising Tide. So what is it? Is it 25 years? Is it 23 years? It's pretty close to...
We're like moving to
like
the quarter
2001.
Century.
Yeah, so...
Right.
Brother, it is a blessing to have you on. So tell our listeners a little bit about Steve Collins.
Well, real quickly, I think the traditional sense, went to university, realized I wasn't going to become a professional basketball player, and started studying business. And I think not out of any particular passion for it. The economy was not good in those days, as you might recall. And so business seemed like a good avenue to get a job. And then I did what you're supposed to do. I went to work for a Fortune 500 company and kind of got exposed to the messiness of leadership and organizational life. And after I'd put in my time there, I did what you're supposed to do next and go get an MBA. And so I spent 2 years doing that, figuring that was, you know, how you climb the corporate ladder. And then somewhere in my second year of business school, I thought it'd be a really neat thing just to go overseas for a year. You know, and just have kind of have that experience, look back years later and go, remember that year when you were in your 20s, you spent a year somewhere as part of just, yeah, again, climbing the corporate ladder. But then something happened, and I ended up teaching English in China. And somewhere in the middle of that, I just felt God saying, this is what I want you to be doing. And so it was quite a bit of a change. So like I say, I went to China for a year and stayed for 10. Probably more accurate to say over the next 10 years, I was there about 8 years, but had the opportunity to go back and be involved in trying to start up businesses in China, which in those days was a little bit like the Wild West. So
almost
learned
a
lot
antithetical.
About
antithetical.
Yeah, really. So that was a real great learning experience. And then after I'd been there for a while, I had the chance to move to the Middle East and do business development and leadership training there for a number of years. And that's where our paths crossed.
Yeah.
And now I've been back in the States about 10 years, continuing to do similar things. Again, a lot of what we do at Lead International is investing in new trainers. We curate and create content and then try to help people be able to deliver that in their situations. And we also work with a lot of organizations that are trying to work in more developing economies and trying to, you know, from fighting human trafficking to providing clean water to medicines, those kinds of things. And so it's we're more geographically dispersed these days, but we tend to focus a little bit more in those areas.
That sounds like it's almost like a B Corp, you know, ideology kind of, you know, it's kind of driving the companies that you're working with. But
yeah, it's really interesting how when you start out, you're kind of, you know, we'll do anything for anybody. And then you know, figure out, well, we're probably not that great at doing everything for everybody, but where also does it align with our purposes? And we've had a chance to work with some great people over the years that really, I think, kept us continuing to focus on that. And so even the work in the Middle East, we had a broad range of clients, but we, you know, realized we were doing a lot of work with the International Committee for the Red Cross, the mm-hmm. United Nations, USAID. So we were already working with organizations that had that sort of purpose driven,
yeah,
what they were doing. And so I think it's kind of a natural bridge to continue to work with those types of organizations.
Well, one thing conspicuously missing in the early bio and intro that you did was the fact that, you know, there's some connection with Michael Jordan and Blue Heaven. Our listeners would really be interested in hearing that story.
Well, obviously, today is a mourning for Carolina fans. Did not go as planned last night, but did have the opportunity. Growing up in North Carolina, my dad was a UNC alumni, so I was a fan of theirs, but you just... There's nothing that can capture a young person's imagination more than playing basketball for North Carolina. And so by the time I got to the University of North Carolina my freshman year, I had not had that, you know, 6-inch over the summer growth spurt.
Scottie
really
Pippen
had not
burst.
Developed a lot of athletic ability, but just loved playing basketball. And so I had the opportunity to go out for the team. And the first year made the junior varsity team. And that was, you know, the potential starting, you know, the dream was still alive. But I always tell the story at the end of my freshman year, I get a note from Roy Williams, who went on to become a Hall of Fame coach. But it was very first year at Carolina. He was the JV coach. And he wrote this wonderful letter to me. He said, "Dear Steve, you make the most out of the talent God gave you." And he was too kind to say, but God did not give you too much talent.
You didn't get enough.
Exactly. There's not enough to really continue in this program. But to me, it was a bit like fantasy camp. You know, you grow up and you dream about wearing the uniform, playing in, at that time, Carmichael Auditorium. And so, it's like letting you go out, let the dream die in kind of a peaceful way, but realize I probably need to discover where's the library and, you know, start majoring in something I could get a job.
And so how far ahead was that to MJ showing up in Chapel Hill?
Michael Jordan was my senior year. He was a freshman. So we had that over, which has been great over the years. Whenever I tell the UNC story, especially in overseas settings, I'll say, "You guys ever heard of Michael Jordan?" And of course they all have. And so when I say, "Oh, we played at the same school," there's this instant, appreciation.
That's right.
In a way.
Credibility, street cred. I mean,
it really was. Had a lot of fun though. In China, we played a lot of basketball in China. And that was oftentimes during the pregame. They'd say, "Hey, you see this guy over here? He played, you know, same school, Michael Jordan." It was kind of a psych out the opponent kind of thing. But no, it was great. Of course, now we look back and that was how many years ago? 45 years ago or something. So it's been a while.
It's been a day or two. Well, I can attest to the fact, personal experience firsthand, not anecdotal. A lot of us, we played basketball together in the Middle East, and a lot of us played in high school. And Steve was a completely different level of basketball player to the rest of us. So he's very humble in his recollection of that story. But I mean, even being on JV in Blue Heaven that was quite an accomplishment. So
I think Roy Williams is a great example. He was 27 years old, had just left high school ranks, and to kind of see a young leader learning the craft and having that opportunity and then being able to follow his career again for the next 40 some years.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to see his growth as a coach, but even seeing the potential in a young guy there and how he was able to grow and take advantage of a lot of really unique opportunities to work with great coaches and all that. It's always been a great example of some of the raw potential you saw as a 27-year-old and how that developed over his career.
And I mean, seems like a really high character guy too, on top of just the whole, you know, ability to get the best out of his players. But you captured, you know, 30 plus years in a pretty short span intro there. And this, you know, our audience is primarily driven by to people that are, you know, sitting in that cube wondering, how do I bust out of here? How do I start something? Or their early stages, you know, it really is focused on kind of the startup scene. But there have been many, many lessons learned over, you know, the years that you have engaged with business owners, with startups, with, you know, training sessions. What are one or two, and try to focus maybe in the startup space, what are two really key lessons that you think are pretty generic? You know, regardless of what the industry is, what are a couple that just kind of stand out that you're like, you know, I've seen this over and over and over and over again?
I go back to trying to start a business in China was a great example of there was so much passion. You know, it was just a dream come true to have that opportunity to be in a place we just found so interesting to work with. I had a couple other guys that started the business with me. And we just, besides, we had a great love of basketball. We spent a lot of time playing basketball, but you're just, you know, you're 30 years old. You're just really kind of beginning to have that opportunity. And there's just so much passion that you have. And I think the startup in China was maybe teaching that passion is not enough. And so we started a business and we were actually doing equipment sales to Chinese factories. And it was, you know, trying to break in oftentimes we were representing organizations that had never sold anything into China before. And just, you know, what are the key elements that you need to be successful in that business? And we discovered over time that we didn't possess the needed skills and experiences and just the resources and assets to do that well. And over time, we kept experimenting and eventually ended up doing consulting for multinational companies coming into China. It was a great fit for us. We could do that really well. So I think that's one of those lessons of, you know, passion's important, but it really has to match up and align with, yeah, with what you're gifted in, what you can develop, and really with the opportunity that's in front of you. And so for us, I think that was a huge lesson for me, that, you know, where you start. Passion's important because oftentimes that's what gets you out of the cubicle.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's what gets you moving. But to be so open to the possibilities that most likely your first idea is not going to be your mm-hmm. best idea. It's not going to be the one that ends up working. And to do that. And the other, I think, sounds like such a cliche, but it's just to recognize there's going to be failures along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I just kind of stay centered. Again, it sounds again so much like a cliche to say, you know, keep the vision in front of you and the purpose and the mission, all those kinds of things. But just recognizing that there's going to be so much learning that's going to take place, and it's going to be a bit painful at times. And I think a lot of times it's kind of finding ways to be grounded, whether that's mm-hmm. you know, in your faith, whether that's with your team members, your purpose, your family, or whatever, but to kind of keep that pendulum swing
mm-hmm.
so it just is not quite so wild as you go through those difficult times. And again, you know, you get to be our age, and you have that context to look
hey
back.
Now,
and
hey, now.
Sense.
I'm closer to MJ.
Yeah. I mean, but it's a bit of that, you know, 25 years later, a lot of things make sense that didn't.
Exactly.
25 minutes after it happened. And so I think maintaining that, because again, part of being a successful entrepreneur is the perseverance. And, you know, if the pendulum swings, can really take a lot of your energy, your resources, and divert your focus away from that. So if you're able to manage that a bit and kind of have that longer term vision, I think that's certainly been true in our experience working with entrepreneurs as well and doing startups, that it's just, there's a pattern. I love that sense when somebody gives you a business plan. You've probably seen plenty of these where you're just going, you know, this is just a tad bit optimistic. You know, it's almost like, frankly, your worst case scenario and your financial projections seem wildly optimistic to me. Kind of thing. And
right.
So recognizing that, you know, you start out with a lot of optimism. How do you keep some of that? Just recognizing it's going to be a journey to get there.
There will be pivots along the way. Was it Churchill that said failure is not fatal?
And then success is not final.
That's right.
I think is the other part of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And it kind of goes back to, with that mentality, the pendulum swings don't quite take you off track as much.
Yeah. And I think I wrote down the notes as you were talking. I said, you know, treat failures along the way as pivots or learning opportunities instead of failures. So, I mean, the only thing that I guess is a failure is if you just run out of cash. You know, so, I mean, that's fatal. So, you know, if you can survive.
I think that's typically what happens a lot of times is by the time you've finally figured out what the workable idea is, you've also run out of the resources to make it happen.
You got to make sure that runway is long enough to learn what the true product market fit is. That's interesting that, you know, it kind of reminded me as you were talking about like Seth Godin's book, The Dip. You know, where there's going to be a trough. I liken it kind of to Pilgrim's Progress, you know, the slough of despond that, you know, Christian had to make it through. But it's kind of what you were getting to a little bit, that with you know, passion is not enough to get you through the slough of despond here. You know, it's, you know, you do have to have perseverance, and there are going to be times where you got to pivot away from maybe the passionate idea to something similar. If you were doing a teaching session today, talking about that, you know, or a related topic, how would you address that with the group that you were talking to?
Well, I was in Kosovo a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to a group of entrepreneurs at a tech park, and it was kind of a celebration. A little bit then they were, some of their members had developed some apps that they were showing off, and a lot of it was probably college students who wanted to get into tech entrepreneurship or whatever. And so, you know, they asked me, you know, to come and speak. And I was like, what do you mean talk about? Whatever you want to talk about. Okay. And my focus was on the sense of getting people to respond with courage in difficult times, but not being about the entrepreneur, but how do you get other people to help you do that? And so I started out by showing them a picture, and it was one guy holding the rope, and they were like tug of war, but there were like eight other people on the other side. And I said, this is what we think entrepreneurship looks like, but what you want it to look like. And then I showed the rest of the picture, and there were like eight other guys behind the one guy. And now I said, that's really what you want to happen. You want, how do you develop people around you that are going to take ownership of the problems, the process, the projects as well? How do you draw people into to doing that? And so I think that's really important, that from the very beginning, you're trying to get other people to be part of what you're doing. And I know a lot of times that's difficult to do, especially when you're starting out, it's just an idea. But the more you're able to do that, and a lot of what we were talking with is just good leadership practices. I mean, how do you demonstrate empathy? How do you ask good questions? Because so often what happens in difficult times is if you haven't developed those relationships with people, it feels like, well, that's not my problem. You know, I'm glad it's not my problem. And so it feels like for the entrepreneur, I'm really the only guy holding the rope. But developing that process that's in there is really good. I was thinking of the Sam Walton story. You know, there was a business historian said that he didn't become the world's richest man because he was a genius. He had the courage of his conviction, but he also knew how to bring other people in with him. And he said something to the effect of like, if we, you know, if we hold to our convictions, if we put people first, then we'll win. And, you know, it's just that kind of idea of like, hey, this is what we're trying to do here. But he could communicate that in a way that other people could say, oh, this is the role that I play in doing that. And so I think investing in people, another quick story, Truett Cathy of Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Really was intentional about who he wanted to bring into the business. He said, the most important decision we make is who joins us in our business. And there was one former executive, he'd gone through this process for like 5 or 6 months. And finally he just says, Truett, am I the right person for the job or not? And Truett says, well, I'm still starting to figure that out. But my question is, are we going to want to be in business together till one of us dies? And I realized, again, with entrepreneur life, you know, it may be 2 or 3 years until, you know, you're not looking then 30 or 40 years, but such an important part of that equation is who do I want to be in business with me? Whether that's, you know, on my team, the people I'm partnering with, the people that are really going to be important in terms of my supply chain. So I think that element of always asking that, who else is going to be in this with me, especially as we talked earlier, and I feel like somebody's with me in the difficult times. Not just, hey, if things go well, everybody's going to show up. But, you know, I'm going to have some difficult times. I'm already thinking, who are the people I want to go with me in that process?
And now here's a quick word from one of our new sponsors on Rising Tide Startups.
At Navicus, we know you spend far too much time on administrative tasks. Let us take those off your plate so you can focus on the highest value activities in your business. We have highly trained, highly vetted specialists ready to take on those administrative responsibilities at an affordable and effective rate. Check us out at navicus.com, proud sponsor of Rising Tide Startups podcast. Well, one of the reasons that that I wanted to chat with you this week was because you have a book that came out, and I know that you wouldn't call me and say, hey, can I be on your podcast? So, because you are certainly a humble leader, but I want to talk about the book. I want to talk about the impetus for writing the book. You know, what was kind of the, let's talk about the planning that went into it, how the whole project kind of developed. So, you know, let's go back to maybe the origin. What was the genesis of the idea?
Yeah, I think we just looked around and said, you know, what the world needs now is one more book on leadership and everything will be good. No, it really wasn't that. I mean, there's so many great books out there, and, you know, it really wasn't like we needed one more. In some ways, the packaging, though, you know, how do we present these ideas in a way? And I think a couple things highlighted that for me. One was the conversations we've had with young leaders for 35 mm-hmm. years yep. in a lot of different places. And you know this as well as I do. A lot of times those young leaders feel more comfortable talking to you, somebody who's a bit outside their culture, mm-hmm. than somebody inside. So you hear a lot of the challenges of young leaders and just, you know, what would be really helpful. The other was that my daughter, when she graduated from university, she went to work for a large media company out in Los Angeles. And she would periodically call me up and say, "Dad, I just had this meeting with my team and it didn't go exactly as I thought it might." You know, it's almost like after the game, let's review the film mm-hmm. and see what happens. Yeah. So we kind of walk through that. And it struck me as she was very gifted in terms of her skill, but really had not had much exposure to how do I work with other people? Yeah. How do I deal with a man? Because I think that's one thing that oftentimes at university students, especially, you do group projects. You have this kind of advisor consulting relationship, but you don't have exactly like a manager relationship mm-hmm. with people at the university level. And so a lot of it was like, you know, we talked through it and, you know, well, you know, when you said this, maybe that was misunderstood or whatever. And so a lot of it was just thinking there are probably a lot of people like that just some foundational management leadership principles would actually help them. Mm-hmm. And so again, it really wasn't this idea of we've got some revolutionary new leadership things to share with people, but what are just some foundational things that would be helpful in doing that? So that was part of it. How do we help people get that? The other was trying to do something a little bit different.
Yep.
And obviously yep. there are a lot of business parables, fables that are out there and they do a great job in doing that. And COVID hit. And my son, Sam, you know Sam, mm-hmm. From since he was little, Sam was doing a lot of screenwriting. And so trying to figure out how to break into that industry. And he was just, because of COVID, he just had this opportunity to spend a lot of time writing. And so he was just pumping out a lot of scripts and I'd be the first ones to read them. And as I was reading them, I thought, you know, this actually reads a lot like these business parables. You think of Patrick Lencioni, Mark yep. Miller, they did a great job with that. And I thought, you know, that's kind of what a screen, you're not trying to write the great American novel. And typically a screenplay is maybe 100, 120 pages, but it's very much about dialogue and just moving the mm-hmm. plot forward because, you know, it's not that descriptive because it's going to be visual. The director is going to make a lot of those decisions anyway. And so I sort of challenged Sam because he was beginning to help me as we, during COVID, were beginning to put more things on video and online right. and just more yep. visual, more scripts we were writing. He was helping me be involved in that. And I said, well, Sam, what if you just tried to, you know, write one kind of a management leadership book and doing that. And part of the challenge with Sam, because he didn't have that corporate experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, he couldn't really write a realistic, here's what it's like to be in the trenches of a large organization. Right. But he could put together a plot line that was more of what we call a sitcom. Mm-hmm. And part of that was do something a little bit different because, again, most business fables, they're not trying to exaggerate things the way a sitcom does. They're more trying to give you that realistic feeling. And so Sam began to, I said, challenge. So he came with this idea of a management professor and his teaching assistant and just kind of, again, in a sitcom format that allows you to exaggerate things. Mm-hmm. At the same time, using that to provide some lessons. So that was kind of the impetus of writing a book that used a little bit different format, hoping it would be of maybe easier to read for, again, especially young leaders that are not as drawn to traditional management literature and ones that perhaps didn't study it in university as well. Right. They're doing other right. things, but they're kind of recognizing, wow, I'm being challenged right now. And really to grow in my profession, I need to develop some of these management leadership skills.
Well, this is the book. It's called, and it's going to be hard on my virtual screen. It's called Reeves and Schuster. Available, I'm guessing, on the Amazon store.
Yeah, on Amazon.
I actually read this entire book this week, and you know, Sam not only is a gifted young man and a gifted writer, it's entertaining. It's one of those where you're like, you know, I read like, I think there are five different kind of mini mm-hmm. plots within the book, and I read one entire one, and then I would take a little break and kind of mull it over a little bit. But it's really interesting that you know, you did see, you know, say, you know, sitcoms can be prone to hyperbole or, you know, whatever you want to use, but the lessons that were applied in each, you know, in each kind of subplot or sitcom episode, you know, if you will, were tremendous. I mean, yeah, I've, you know, well, you've seen my library. I've read, you know, hundreds of books kind of in this space. This is one of the most enjoyable books that I've read in a very long time. And so I highly encourage our, and not just because you're my friend, I'm not getting kickbacks from this. So, but it is really well written, an easy read, but has great principles, I think, you know, wrapped up into each kind of sub story, you know, that's in there. And they're likable or not, you know, you like and dislike the characters based on, you know, just the narration around them, the narrative around each character. So you can easily put yourself in the storyline, as Donald Miller, you know, says we all are prone to do. Mm-hmm. But what's been the initial feedback? Others that have looked at the book and read the manuscript. I got a sneak peek on some of that before, you know, it went to print as well. But what's been the initial feedback?
Yeah, first I would say, yeah, appreciations to you, Kevin, for that initial feedback. I think that was really helpful for us is, again, trying to figure out how to write the book, you know, what to include, how much depth, detail and stuff. So all that was really helpful, especially in the early processes of that. I think, again, some of the feedback has been related to, especially among younger leaders, mm-hmm. that it was kind of a helpful kind of easy to read, but kind of made the point, mm-hmm. that they could identify. And again, that's part of the thing, I think, with the sitcom. Again, you have such a license with the characters, yeah. that, you know, you can exaggerate things and allow them to hopefully make the point in doing that. I think another comment has been recognizing how we were able to weave servant leadership into, mm-hmm. that the whole storyline. And a part of it is we wanted to show that both character and skill matter in being a good leader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in our storyline, we have a management professor who has a lot of knowledge, and we have a teaching assistant who has a real servant's heart. I mean, he wants to do the right thing. He's got a lot of character, but he's also kind of the comic relief. He's the one who, you know, is an exaggerated character, that would be easy to make fun of, but he's got such a good character that he always, mm-hmm. wants to be helpful. He wants to, yep. help his professor solve whatever problem it is. But then by the end of the book, I think we hopefully have shown how he's continued to grow in his skill level. Mm-hmm. And he still is prone to do the silly, sure. stuff that is part of the sitcom, but he's really grown in his understanding of taking that servant's heart, but also being able to have skills and be useful. And a lot of times we do talk about, you know, being a servant leader is about adding value. Mm-hmm. So it's not just having great character, yeah. and wanting to serve, but as a servant leader, you're able to add value. And I think by the end of the book, we see how the teaching assistant Reeves has really figured out some things, how, mm-hmm. he can really add value based on this experience. And then I think we've also seen growth in the management professor, mm-hmm. who, you know,
boy,
like some of us who's a bit reluctant to get involved, would like to be left alone, mm-hmm. doesn't want to be bothered with things. But once he's drawn in, he does, you know, want to resolve the situation. But how he's actually been influenced in his own character, mm-hmm. by the good servant heart of the teaching assistant, yeah. and how they've kind of both
effect.
Grown.
It's not just the professor. It's not, mm-hmm. just the teaching assistant. I mean, there's a ripple effect to others, you know, kind of sub characters, you know, in the storyline that are affected in this. And I, to be honest with you, I think the biggest takeaway, and no spoiler alert here, but I think the biggest takeaway was at the very end when you wrapped it up kind of with the epilogue or whatever at the very end, mm-hmm. that where you made a very clear distinction between that, you know, that was really surrounding motivation, you know, why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. And that was such a great way to kind of wrap up the whole, you know, book without me spoiling the, you know, the ending. The puppy doesn't die, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's Lassie doesn't die at the end, yeah. But it reminded me a little bit, and I certainly don't want to pigeonhole you into this category, because this is certainly has a throwback, you know, feeling to it, but yet it has a very modern feel to it as well. So it's not time bound anywhere. But, you know, I do think about the like Andy Griffith episodes. You know, mm-hmm. there's always this thing that happens, and then at the end we wrapped it up, and there's this moral, you know, lesson, you know, that was kind of applied without being explicitly said, you know. So what did we learn from this, you know, this situation. So I, yeah, kudos to you and Sam. Well written, very entertaining, and certainly a very thankful addition to my library. But Steve, what else can we touch on that we haven't asked you about, or, you know, if you have just a way to kind of wrap this up, a great closing thought for our listeners, and then maybe tell people where to find more about this book and your teaching programs online.
Yeah, I think in terms of, you started talking about entrepreneurship, and I think in leadership in general, it's interesting to me that in a lot of ways we look at advances in technology and all those kind of things. But we hardly ever really talk about advances in leadership. And we don't kind of say, you know, leaders are so much better now than they used to be. And it's just an ongoing challenge. I think it just kind of reflects human nature. And people used to ask me, what do you do for a living? And I say, well, I get paid to tell people what they already know. And that's how what leadership feels like. Say, everybody talks about, you know, we need good communication, collaboration, and those kinds of things. But yet it's still a challenge for us to do that. And so I think recognizing our just humanity in doing that, I feel like, especially for young leaders, the greatest joy you're going to have is going to be working with the people around you, seeing them grow and develop, and the opportunity you have to play a role in that is huge. But also your biggest frustration as a leader are going to be those same people that, you know, you're trying to get them to do things and they don't. And it's a challenge. And so I think in terms of developing yourself as a leader, as an entrepreneur, it's always going to revolve around really your growth in yourself, but also that influence you have over other people. And so it's kind of an encouragement in that. That it's kind of easy sometimes to get so focused on sort of technical solutions or whatever, but it really is in some ways those adaptive leadership challenges where you've got to help people to move and change and move in a positive direction. I think it's just such an opportunity as leaders. I know a lot of times, again, the book I felt like was really primarily for younger leaders, but hopefully experienced leaders kind of can take a step back and just think, what am I really doing in that role that I have, that opportunity, the stewardship of leadership, wherever you are. And again, I go back to the book. I think it's the idea you mentioned, you know, the influence people have on each other. Mm-hmm. And when you're a young leader, sometimes it's easy to feel like, you know, I don't have the position, the status to do that, but to recognize you can be a positive influence wherever you are in the organization, whatever you're trying to
like
do.
Leading up, you know?
Yeah, it really is. It's leading up wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And so hopefully, you know, it's just an encouragement for people to be developing themselves in that way. In terms of where to reach us, we do have a website related to the book, rsleadershiplessons.com. There's some resources on that link back to Lead International and link to our Lead Academy as well. We have some courses. And then really there's an email address on there, and you know, we're always interested in hearing from people, you know, if they've read the book, if there's some application, anything we can learn from others, ways to encourage others. We're certainly interested in that.
Well, make sure you send me the URL links, and I'll make sure that they're in the show notes. Steve, as always, it's a pleasure. I mean, we do get, I have the blessing of seeing you, you know, quite often, but just seeing you in this format and seeing you shine, because you have been a leader in this space for a very long time and have taught me so much over the years, just sitting there listening to you and just having conversations with you. But great friend, good brother, and high character, and truly a servant leader. And you've exhibited that for a long, long time. But just thank you again for coming on and just playing your part in helping all boats rise in a rising tide. Steve, have a blessed Easter weekend.
You too. Thank you, Kevin.
I hope you heard some great takeaways from our guests today. Make sure you reach out to them, and thank you again for playing your part in helping all boats rise in a rising tide.